Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Bill Arum. I can't believe I've been doing the show for like 3 years now, and this has never happened yet. So thanks for hopping on with me, Bill.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Anthony.
Bill is covering the Lakers this year for the sixth year in a row, but he is now the first year that he's going to be writing for The Athletic, and we were just talking a lot about how I think it's really cool that The Athletic is one of these platforms that's at the forefront of, no, actually bloggers and journalists and beat reporters and everybody can really coexist here and cover this team about as well as any team I think has really been covered in quite a long time.
Yeah, I think we're really excited about the team we have. Really everywhere. I mean, you look kind of across the country and the people The Athletic has hired, it's pretty inspiring to me to be a part of. But locally in LA especially, I mean, you look at, we have the Kamenetsky brothers who've been obviously a vital source of information and opinion and context and analysis on the Lakers for, forever. And then obviously we have Pete, Laker Film Room, who is doing something nobody else in the country is doing. And Laker fans are obviously very lucky to have on their team. And I think everyone understands that, and it's reflected in his popularity online. But then also, I bring kind of the more traditional newspaper beat perspective. So, I mean, together, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of fun and, team up to cover what's, going to be an all-time fascinating Lakers team. I mean, the first year of LeBron James and all these young guys, and then maybe some guys who fans were maybe surprised to see join the Lakers in Rondo and Beasley and Lance Stephenson, and see how it all comes together. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating year and a privilege to get to chronicle.
Yeah, I can't wait. I don't really recall another season that I was looking forward to as much as this one. I think it even tops the Dwight Mayer season. I mean, that had a ton of hype going into it, and there was the whole Sports Illustrated, now this is going to be fun thing. So there was definitely a lot of excitement there. But having, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player ever, like getting to watch him on a nightly basis, I really can't wait for that. But today's show, though, we're going to focus on the guy who's going to be pressing the buttons for the Lakers and setting the tone kind of from his position in Luke Walton. And what I find interesting with him, I'm going to break this down. This is just like the rest of our player previews. We're going to start with how we got here and then kind of what he needs to focus on individually. And then in the team dynamic in segment three, you guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me. And again, make sure you guys are subscribing to The Athletic. But I thought, for me, what I was thinking about in my research for this thing was Luke Walton, to me, symbolized like the real turning point for the Lakers. Like, they, for a long time, were striking out on free agents. They had lost their own free agents on a couple occasions. And Luke was like the first guy that he hit the open market, and he was maybe the biggest name on said open market. And they got their guy. And I think from there, you've seen the tone and culture change completely throughout the organization from that point moving forward.
Yeah, I think this was a really deliberate process that was started by Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss. And say what you will about the miscues of that regime and players missed out on in free agency and players targeted in free agency, the Lou Aldang and Mozgov contracts. But in the summer of 2016, they said they knew that Luke Walton was a hot coaching prospect. They understood that he could inject the organization with an energy that had been missing for a long time. It's always been my understanding and belief that hastened the departure of Byron Scott in fear that if they waited another year to get Luke, he would be gone. So they made the choice to put all those pieces together to go get the guy that they wanted. And from that point on, you talk to people in the organization, the thought was they're going to build this team around Luke entirely. And that was, there were people who thought, maybe he would eventually grow into a coach / front office job, like make him like the pop of the Lakers down the road. I mean, there was a ton of both faith and trust in Luke Walton. And obviously a lot of that sort of evolved once Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka came in. But for the most part, I mean, everybody's remained on message about Luke. I mean, they believe in him as the person to implement the vision of magic and the Bus family. And I don't think that all these things that have fallen into place, including LeBron, maybe they get LeBron without Luke Walton, but I don't think that everything that falls into place as neatly as it has without kind of that first piece. So I think looking at Luke as the turning point is correct. I mean, you could probably also look at kind of the Tuesday that Mitch and Jim got fired and Magic came in as their replacement. But before that, they hired Luke Walton and turned the page and kind of acknowledged that they had a long-term plan going forward. Of course, they promptly followed that up by signing Luol and Mozgov. So it was one step forward, two steps back for a little while.
Literally, two huge contract steps back. Yeah, I would agree with the assessment. In terms of the coaching that he's done to get us to this point, I've been there were some aspects of it that have surprised me. There are some aspects of it that I've really liked. I think the one thing that Luke has shown an ability to do with the players that the Lakers really consider a part of their future moving forward and important for them moving forward is he's been a really good communicator. It's really rare that guys that the Lakers considered really important moving forward were frustrated by the lack of communication. Whereas like you combine that, you compare that to Byron who preceded him. And there was a lot of like, no, the rookies got to earn the right to talk to me first kind of thing. And I think given how much change has taken place across this roster and how many egos are now in place, I think it's going to be really vital that Luke continues that amount of communication throughout the various tiers of talent on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of been the hallmark of his tenure, right, is being able to communicate and relate with players. And even with Julius Randle, which has been probably the most tension he's had on the roster, at least among the young players, they got to a point where they were communicating and Luke was communicating with Julius about what his expectations were. And we saw Julius turn a corner and earn his way back into the starting lineup and overcome some of those early season attitude issues that Luke was very public about last season and have a career year and earn himself another contract. So I think that it would be really, I mean, that to me is what has made Luke successful. And the reason I think he'll be successful with LeBron James and a more veteran team is the fact that, you know, he is a very good communicator. He's a good listener. Players have responded well to him. And I think Luke will adjust kind of whatever it is that he needs to adjust, with a new crop of players or a new look in the locker room, to get through to them. But I do think that that has been probably the most important part. And when you look at the young players he's had, and they all come with different attitudes and different perspectives about, you know, needing the ball and needing to be the guy. You had D'Angelo Russell and, you know, just a real kind of strange collection of players as he's gone on, and so many young guys, and he's kept it from going off the rails or any real tension. I think that's been critical.
Yeah, it's impossible to isolate him completely from the team dynamic here because he is legit. It's just not possible to do that with a head coach. But we're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the stuff that I think is going to be key in deciding what the Lakers are capable of next year, and some of it kind of rides contrary to how most NBA teams have operated to this point. So hang tight. We'll be right back in a second. But first, let's take another quick second here to talk about Ease. They have supported this entire player preview series. It's coming to a close, slowly but surely. We are now in the last stretch here of all of these previews, and obviously we aren't even doing a player preview here. But Ease has been great. They have supported us with a great product. They are the easiest way to come across legal marijuana from your house. You have to be 21 or older, but go to ease.co, EAZE.co/lockedon to get your $20 off of your first purchase there. They have everything that you need. They are going to link you to all of the types of retailers that you would need or that you would prefer with all of the products that you would look for to either improve your life or if you want to use it recreational, whatever. It's all there for you. So go to ease.co, EAZE.co/lockedon to get $20 off your first purchase or find them in the app. So my concern when the Lakers were making all these additions after LeBron, obviously no concern when you add LeBron, but with some of the players that they added after LeBron, there are guys there are members of the Lakers young core that I think fit better alongside LeBron, even for Luke Walton style and playing with LeBron, than some of the guys that they added here. And my concern all kind of offseason has been, well, usually free agent additions and veterans kind of get a little bit more leeway, a little bit longer leash in terms of, okay, those guys are going to get the minutes. They don't have to prove themselves as much. And my thing is, I'm really interested to see how Luke, still a relatively young coach, handles a locker room that is so cleanly divided between veteran additions and young core moving forward.
Yeah, I think that is the question. I mean, you do have, I think, a potential for combustibility in the locker room. You have a lot of big personalities. You have guys who, you know, have been seen as NBA bad boys, I guess, for lack of a better term, in Lance Stephenson and Beasley and Rondo has played himself out of several situations since leaving Boston. And so it becomes kind of, is this too much for one coach? For a coach who's still trying to bring along a young team, integrate a superstar, is it too much to have then all these dueling personalities? And guys like Rondo, who can be a tremendous mentor for Lonzo Ball. I think that we saw that in Chicago, even with the problems Rondo had in Chicago with Fred Hoiberg and with the Bulls. He was viewed as a great mentor to their young players. Would expect the same with Lonzo, but he also wants to come in and be the starting point guard. And if he finds himself not playing in situations when he thinks he's going to be on the floor, does that start to go sideways? Lance Stephenson wants to play. Michael Beasley, not entirely sure what his expectations are. I think that, you know, he probably comes up with a different set of expectations, but it does create this situation where a lot of, if anything goes sideways, people are going to look to Luke Walton to solve it. And he hasn't had to deal with that at any point in his coaching career, even going back to the Warriors when he had so much success, like could have won Coach of the Year that year. He had situations that were really well grounded. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that says that this year won't be that way, that this won't come together and that LeBron won't kind of keep the locker room in check and Luke can just coach. I mean, that's entirely possible too, but for the most, I think for the most part, you know, this is just going to be something we haven't seen for Luke. So this is a test of kind of his ability to manage a situation, a potentially combustible situation. But again, like I go back to his ability to communicate his success in past situations, the admiration that he has had from players of all calibers, and you know, going back to the superstars in Golden State who are different from LeBron, but still superstars. The way Kobe Bryant felt about him as a player, Kobe is probably closer to LeBron than anyone else who has been around Luke up to this point. So I think that it's an interesting test, but not something that he's not going to be able to handle.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. I think it's going to be a challenge, but it's one that he's really well situated to handle.
None of us know how this is going to go. I mean, none of us know how Luke is going to respond or what changes Luke is going to make. I do think it is one of the most interesting questions of this season, though, because you have all these guys who, you know, maybe there's red flags with these players, but the Lakers front office has made a fairly compelling case about why they went this direction. They wanted to be tougher. They wanted to be more physical. They wanted to be, you know, more attack minded. And so there, you can make that case, but then also if this doesn't start off well, is Luke vulnerable? And everything we've heard up to this point from everyone is that Luke Walton is the head coach of the Lakers for for a long time, that they are building this thing around him. But that all changes when you get LeBron James, who I think has an unfair reputation as a coach killer, because you look at his career, it really hasn't happened with the exception of David Blatt, who was, you know, hired for an entirely different job. Yeah. And, you know, but other than that, I mean, yes, there was tension with Eric Spoelstra, but Spoelstra was more like, I would say more like Luke in that he had the support of management from day one. Ty Lue, there was tension, but there, but they got through it. And the same with Mike Brown. Even Mike Brown was ultimately fired at the end of the 2010 season, but they spent 5 years together and reached the finals. And so I think, you know, this whole idea that Luke's on the hot seat. I mean, any NBA coach is on the hot seat, but that Luke, you know, there's a countdown clock on Luke, is probably unfair. I think it would have to be a real disaster for Luke to be in real trouble this year.
Yeah, I think the way I would kind of describe the situation and why there's some concern is that, look, I mean, Luke wasn't hired by Magic, right? And a lot of times when you see the type of overhaul in front offices, that usually comes with some type of coaching change so that the new regime gets their guy in place. That said, though, Luke is very much a Jeannie Buss coach, right? Like, she has openly said, like, no, we stand with Luke. That's going in Luke we trust, I think, is one of the other hashtags that we used or that she's used. And then on top of that, like, Luke being a former Laker champion, like, that's going to help him with some of the leeway here. And the thing here that I think is going to be the biggest factor of all of this is the amount of respect that LeBron has for Magic. So long as Magic is out there saying, no, Luke is our guy, and Jeannie is out there saying Luke is our guy, LeBron has seen this and spoken about his time with the Lakers as a partnership with Magic Johnson. And if Magic is saying out here, no, this is our coach, this is how we're going to make this work, I feel like LeBron is going to fall in step with there. So all of the biggest voices in the room here are probably going to wind up being on Luke's side in all of this. And I think, given how many other variables there are at play, the fact that he has those voices speaking up for him, that's the biggest factor here than anything beyond wins, obviously, that he can have going for him.
Yeah, so Magic is obviously the wild card here, because you're spot on. I mean, Jeannie Buss is the biggest backer Luke Walton has in the organization, and that's saying a lot, because there are a lot of people in the organization who really believe in Luke. And I think it would take a lot for Jeannie to sign off on replacing him. Yeah. But it would be interesting, and we are deep into the hypotheticals here because we haven't even seen what this team looks like. They might be great, and this might be a totally moot point.
Yeah.
But in the event, yeah, right. But in the event that the Lakers struggle, and a case could be made that a different coach would have more success, it would be an interesting test of Jeannie Buss's loyalties if Magic Johnson came to her and proposed making a coaching change, because Jeannie has been firmly in Luke's corner. She believes that he's the right guy for the Lakers, but she also has given complete authority to Magic. Mm-hmm. You know, we know the right people are in Luke Walton's corner in being Jeannie Buss. Kobe Bryant has been a supporter of Luke as a coach, and Kobe continues to have real influence on the Lakers organization, not only with Jeannie Buss, but with Rob Pelinka.
Yep.
Kobe Bryant has been instrumental in shaping Rob's perspective his outlook on kind of on the organization. So I think, again, we're deep into the hypothetical. I think Luke is going to be fine, but there are some interesting factors sort of at play, because you're right. I mean, there's no question in my mind that Magic Johnson has a list, at least in his head of if he needed to hire a new coach, where he would go. And you know, that just in to any coach has to be a little unnerving just to know, that you're hired to be fired and that you can always be replaced very, very quickly.
Yep. All right, we're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how Luke might handle this team specifically. Unfortunately, all we have to work off of is hypotheticals, but I do think there are some things that we've seen from his coaching technique to this point that we can kind of draw a couple hypotheses to figure out what this team might look like next year. So hang tight. We'll be right back in a second. So one thing that we've really seen from Luke, and it's something, and I think it's very obvious in the way that this team has been built, is that he likes a deep rotation. He likes a deep roster. He likes to get guys in there for shorter spurts than you would maybe necessarily anticipate being an NBA player on other teams. But he wants to go deep, and he wants to play with about 10 guys or so and figure out how to work his rotation there. And when you see, you know, there are legitimate NBA players two or three spots down in each roster on this in each position on this depth chart, you can kind of see how this might start to take shape with the things that Luke has seemed to prioritize here. I have to imagine he's really excited about how many various iterations of rotations that he could put in place with this team specifically, given how it was built.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, I mean, the thing that we always forget in the summer in September is it is such a long season. There are injuries. There are slumps. I mean, the Lakers are not going to be 13 players deep all season. Yeah. And so that's kind of one early disclaimer. But I think you look at what Luke likes. He likes playing matchups. He likes versatility. He likes different ball handlers. The Lakers can have, Rondo, when he was introduced, made this point. At some point they could have, five guys who can really handle the ball on the floor at once. I mean, that is a huge asset for the Lakers, especially a Lakers team coached by Luke Walton, who I've written this and people are probably tired of me saying this, but like I go back 2 years. You remember there was a game, I don't even remember if they played, maybe the Pacers or Hawks or something like that in November, and the Lakers were hurt in the backcourt, and they started Ingram at point guard and Meta at the two. And I remember talking to Luke after the game, because it was a disaster. Meta was not good at the two. He got blown by on defense and whatever. And I asked Luke, I'm like, why? And he talked about this philosophy he has of playing, like, all interchangeable, positionless 6'9" guys. And the Lakers more or less have the roster to do what Luke's utopian vision that night was. I mean, you can have Ingram, Kuzma, LeBron, Lonzo, let's say Rondo or Beasley or whoever on the floor. Yeah, I mean, and be like really interchangeable, switch everything defensively, and really frustrate teams. Now you're not gonna be able to go to that every night. You're probably not gonna be able to go to that, as regularly as you might think, but it's there. And that's kind of what the construction of this roster allows. I think you're going to see a lot of guys playing like, 10 minutes one night and 28 minutes the next night. I think there's going to be fluctuation there. Guys like Lance Stevenson and Beasley, kind of depending on the way nights are going. I do think one interesting question with the number of guys the Lakers have is kind of where the whole idea of development fits into this. Because the Lakers are clearly in win, get to the playoffs, advance, go as deep as you can mode. But they also still have young players who are still coming along who need to be on the floor. And not Wagner or Bonga necessarily or Svi, so much as guys who are now NBA players like Josh Hart, Kuzma. Do you give them more time, or how do you balance their need to be on the court and develop versus, them falling behind on the depth chart behind somebody who's a little more veteran. And I think Hart's the guy I look at and worry about maybe the most in that sense. His versatility, I think, is going to be a huge, is going to help him a lot. In fact, he can play three positions and shoot the ball the way he can on a team that doesn't have a lot of shooters. But you could make an argument, and I wouldn't, but if you were looking strictly at shooting guard, you could argue he's third on the depth chart. And you've got two starting caliber point guards, and then you've got a logjam at the three. Does Josh Hart, that you need him on the floor. You need him, putting aside the fact he might be your best two-way player, but you need him, aside from LeBron, but you need him on the floor to just keep getting better. Where do those minutes come from? I think that's really the challenge of this. And do you then say, okay, Lance Stevenson, you're great situationally, and we like you in the locker room, and we like the edge you bring, but you're not playing over Josh Hart on a typical night. I think it's interesting, and we don't know how that's going to play out. I think that's something that we'll get a sense of in the preseason, but we probably won't know and really know how that looks until like December.
Yeah, well, in Hart's case especially, like it's right out there, and Magic and Pelinka have both said it without necessarily saying it, because then it would start nearing towards tampering. But their sights are set on adding another max player next year. And if they use all their cap space, the growth is going to come from the growth that's already on their roster, right? So it's not just it's not just from the standpoint of it's good to have these guys grow because that helps us organizationally. But if the Lakers really want
they need to have bigger roles next year. Next year they're going to be the others around, let's just say LeBron and Kawhi, or LeBron and Clay, LeBron and Jimmy Butler, whatever it is. You're not gonna have any money for anybody else. You're gonna have LeBron, superstar X, and then Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball. That's your team. That's your rotation. You know, and Wagner and whoever else I forgot. But I mean, that's more or less your team.
Yeah, if the Lakers really want to challenge the Warriors, who are like the perfect example of that kind of growth that took place on the peripherals of their roster, those guys are going to need minutes this year. And yes, that's the balance that's going to be really fascinating to watch take place. Is how do they weigh? We need to produce now so that we get wins now and meet this year's goals, with also an eye towards the future as well. The last thing I really wanted to figure or to see your opinion on was, when it comes to LeBron playing the five, that's the big debate. That's the big question that's kind of been bandied about all summer long, is he's been reluctant to play the four. And there is a lot of speculation that the Lakers are because of the way that they built their roster. I mean, they only really have JaVale McGee, and there are no other starting or I would even say NBA caliber centers that I would bet on being NBA caliber next year centers on their team. And so they might have kind of sort of forced LeBron's hand, like, hey, sorry, LeBron, but you kind of sort of just need to play here. We need you here. But for a young coach to ask a legitimate, one of the best players in the history of the game, to do something that he's been reticent to do up until this point throughout his now, 17-year-ish career, that's where the communication, to kind of bring this full circle, that's where it's going to come into play here as well, is we need you to do something that you haven't really necessarily shown an openness to do. Do you think Luke is capable of convincing him there, or do you think that's more of something that's going to have to come from on high with conversations between LeBron and Magic?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, yeah. LeBron's going to have to play some center, just because, like you said, there's no one else. I think there are options. You have JaVale. I don't know what Zubac's summer has looked like, or how he's going to come along. I mean, he obviously regressed in year two, but they also made a choice to keep him over Thomas Bryant this year. So they must have some faith that he is a player, or that he can contribute. But barring a breakout year for Zubac or JaVale McGee, who I haven't looked lately, but what's his, like, the most he's averaged in the season minutes wise, like 13 or something like that? He has not played. He's not been a stalwart presence on any of the teams he's played on. So expecting more than that from him would be,
he has an asthma thing that has stopped him from playing long minutes, like, throughout his career.
Yeah, he hasn't played more than 20 minutes a game since 2011-12. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played a lot when he was with the Wizards, going way back. But it's been a while, and so he has, you know, it would be ramping up a lot to get him on the floor for more than 15-18 minutes a game. You know, he was good for the Warriors the last couple of years, but he averaged 9 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are questions that need to be answered there. I think when the Lakers are small, or when other teams are small, the Lakers are going to be able to get away with LeBron. It's not going to be that much more taxing on him than playing the three or the four necessarily. In fact, it may actually help him a little bit, but I do think this is a problem that the Lakers are going to continue to have. I mean, they're a question they're going to have to answer. I don't think there is an easy answer right now. It's like, oh, LeBron will just play the five and blah, blah, blah. No, it's going to be an evolving question and something that is going to be, probably messed with throughout the first few months of the season. But I do think that they're going to need McGee and Zubats and Wagner to all kind of fight for minutes there, because they don't have a lot of good options, and LeBron is probably best at center only situationally and not out of necessity.
Yeah, I think the big key here is he, LeBron is a brilliant basketball mind. It won't take very much for anybody to realize, oh no, wait, the Lakers need to spell minutes here at the five consistently. And so in some way, like, the Lakers kind of forced his hand, but it's also going to be a nightly conversation, I think, especially early in the year, between Luke and his coaching staff and then the guys involved here. Like, all right, how do we actually get to the 48 minutes a game at that five spot that we need to fill? Because and there was some talk earlier, I think, this year. I think Pelinka was saying, is on record to say, that they've looked at some of Kuzma at the five. Which, mm-hmm. I'd like to see that before I'm confident in seeing that or thinking that that's actually going to work out. But yeah, I mean,
it's, you have a lot of skilled stretch fours.
Yeah,
and it is not so much of a stretch in the modern NBA to play a couple of stretch fours and play one of them as the five.
Yeah.
So it's, but defensively is where you really struggle, especially against the best centers in the NBA. And there's still a lot of really good, legitimate centers in the NBA who I don't know that you want to subject. I don't know if you want to subject Kyle Kuzma to Andre Drummond.
No,
necessarily. Probably not. That would frighten me.
Well, what you're saying is we should get ready for the hashtag Brooke Lopez revenge game is how I think this is all playing out. But we'll see.
I mean, I still think Brooke Lopez would have made a lot of sense for this team, and he would have fit in really well. But that ship had sailed. So that is no longer relevant.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much for hopping on with us. Is there anything specific that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Just The Athletic. I think that there's going to be a lot of really good stuff there done by all of us covering the Lakers. I think it's an exciting venture across the board, but especially in LA in a historic time. So I look forward to covering it for all those who will be following along and reading.
Yep. Subscribe, everybody. I'm paid to talk. I can't speak. But thanks for hopping on with us, Bill. Have a great rest of your off season, and I'm sure I'll see you around this upcoming year.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. I really look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.